Good morning, everyone. Thanks, Kevin. Thanks, Michelle. Good morning. I'm excited that you're here with us this morning. If you're new or a guest, I'm super excited that you're here. I got to actually meet a few of you this morning, so that was exciting. But if you don't know who I am, my name is Will. That's when you say, hi, Will. Thank you. Hi. And I do the youth and worship here, but today, obviously, I'm not doing worship because Kevin covered for me. But for the past few weeks, we've been going through a new series called Future Family. So if you missed any, it's totally okay, because you can go on Facebook Live, because we have Facebook, and you go on Facebook Live and re-watch anything that you missed, or you can listen via podcast. But Pastor Jimmy, over the past few weeks, has been talking about our future family. And he talked in the first week about the real and ideal family. And then last week, we got super practical, and he asked us one question. And he asked us to invite that question to others. What can I do to help? And for me, that was a super frustrating question. Because Jimmy last week told me he was going to be asking that question, but he didn't tell me what the question was going to be. So I advertised it to the youth group, hey, come to church because we're going to be asking this question. I don't know what it is, but apparently it's going to be a good one. And I remember wrestling with it because I'm sitting there in the pew in the back row where I always sit, and he puts the question on the screen. It was, what can I do to help? And I was frustrated with how simple of a question it was. It wasn't this super theological, super deep question that you have to ask yourselves and, you know, got to pray to God about. It was a simple question. What can I do to help? And that frustrated me how simple it was. And then it frustrated me even more that I couldn't put it to practice even though it was a simple question. This week, I tried to use that question on my girlfriend. I've been in a dating relationship for about 5 years. And I remember, you know, having my phone in hand, I was going to text her, what can I do to help? But then I was afraid of what she would ask me to do. So I ignored it. In full attention, I was like, okay, tomorrow, today, new day, it's Tuesday, Monday's passed, I missed it. Tuesday, I'm going to ask her, what can I do to help? And it's perfect, because I'm going to see her that night, so I can fill her car with gas, or I can pump air in her tires in her car. And then I saw her. We ate Chipotle, and I didn't ask the question. I didn't ask it. I started getting more and more frustrated, and now it's Sunday, and I still didn't ask it. But she's watching online. She's watching online, so Sharon, I will ask you the question sometime this week. Now I have to because I said it out loud. But that threw me into a conflict of how simple of a truth it was, and I couldn't do it. And this morning, I want to talk about conflict, and I can see, because some of you heard that I was talking about conflict already, that threw you into conflict, knowing that I was going to be talking about it. But is there anyone here who actually loves conflict? I didn't think so. Everybody, I don't think anyone likes arguing. I remember we have a preaching team, and I was sitting at the table, and we were going over what series we were going to do over the next few months. And we were talking about future family, and we had all these series, and who's going to do what message. And like Jimmy kind of looks at me, and I'm excited to preach again, so I go, oh, what am I doing? And he looks at me, and he kind of smiles, and he goes, oh, yours is conflict. I was like, dang it, because he knows I hate conflict. Thanks, Jimmy. I hate conflict. It makes me feel anxious. If I know I'm in an argument with someone, I've got to see them the next day. Like, I can't sleep at night. I keep tossing and turning. I'll try to avoid it. And there's people who, when conflict approaches, they have no problem running towards it. You'll see me running quickly the other direction. It's probably the only time you'll ever see me run, is when I'm running away from conflict. I hear about other people's conflict all the time. I hear about it. But dealing with my own is a lot different. I don't like to deal with my own conflict. And the truth is, no matter who you are, conflict is something we all deal with. And another big truth is it's present in all families. When dealing with conflict in families, you have to realize something. The more you deal with conflict, the more you have arguments in your family, the more you start to realize no one ever wins at home. When you're in an argument with someone or you're in a conflict with someone in your family, you can't win. It's impossible because it's different than all other conflicts. At work or at school or with your friends, you can win a conflict because you usually have people cheering you on. Like, oh yeah, you really told the boss, you really stuck it to him. At home, no one's going to celebrate with you. No one's going to say, yeah, way to do it. You really angered mom, because now we're all grounded. Conflict at home, you can't win because it's always left with unresolved issues. It's always left with hurt feelings. No one's celebrating with you. No one's cheering you on. You can win an argument. You can win a battle at home, but you can't win the war. Have you ever been a part of a family reunion? I've been to one my whole life where like all of my mom's side of the family got together. And one of the things we dealt with was there was like dramatic situations because certain aunts and uncles didn't want to talk to certain cousins or aunts and uncles. So you would see like this cluster of people gathering on this side of the yard and the other side of the yard, they're gathering over here, and they would start to avoid each other. And it's even harder when it's in your immediate family, when the tension's at home, when the conflict is at home, because where are you going to run to? At least at a family reunion, you can go in your car and leave at the end of it. At home, it's different. You're in there. They're just in the room across from you. And that tension that happens at home quickly builds into more conflict. And it builds and it snowballs. And more arguments come out of it. And then maybe you find yourself after work one day pulling in your driveway, and you sit there just for a few more minutes because you know what's on the other side of that door once you get out of the car. When there's conflict and tension at home, you know when you get out of your car and go inside, there's bickering. There's snippy comments. There's something to bicker about and get angry about. That's conflict. When you're afraid to go in your house because how stressful it's going to be. In family, it's different. It's so personal, and it's never business. It's more emotional, and it's always taken to heart. And something happens when conflict builds. People in your family start to become your emotional punching bag. That, oh, you didn't clean the dishes? Let me scream at you for the next half hour. It doesn't really equal up, because that means there's something else going on. There's a bigger conflict. Not the dishes, something bigger. So let's just understand this now. Today is not a how to win an argument at home. That's not what today's about. Today is how to approach conflict differently. Part of the reason conflict is not something as simple as going into it with a rules on how to win or lose is because everybody deals with conflict differently. We all have a different way of handling how we argue. Some of you, and I'll understand this one very well, are the peacemakers. You're all about keeping the peace. Peacemakers, peacekeepers, you are all about everything is fine, you ignore the conflict. That's me. All about ignoring it. If we're fighting, I will ignore it, I will change the subject, I will crack a joke, I will start singing a song. So when people are getting in my face going, I can't believe you, hey, have you heard that new worship album by Elevation? It's really good. And they actually get more annoyed that I won't talk about the conflict. Peacemakers try and ignore the conflict and move on right back to the happy times. People will tell you, sometimes when I'm in conflict, I'll like say a little jab and then I'll hum afterwards. I don't know why, but I'll be like, well, it's your fault. Like, because I know I'm about to get in trouble again. That's the peacekeepers. They kind of say it, but then they want to make a joke out of it so you don't really get mad. And then we have the sulkers, that whenever you're in conflict, it's all about you and you're very upset. And afterwards, no matter if the conflict went good or bad, you're still upset. And you keep it all, and you don't tell anybody how you feel. You don't say your true emotions. You keep it all inside. And then you become a stuffer, weird to say, but you become a stuffer who keeps it all in, and you say the one thing that everybody hates to hear, and we know you're lying when you say it. Hey, how are you doing? I'm fine. Fine. I'm fine. I'm fine. We know what fine means. Fine means I'm angry, I'm upset, walk away. But then we have the litigator, the lawyers of conflict. You're the ones who have absolutely, you're never wrong. Never wrong. I know a few litigators in my life. You're never wrong, and you always have the stats and the statistics. It doesn't matter. If you were supposed to get home at 11 o'clock and you got home at 11:02, a litigator will make sure you know you were 2 minutes late. You weren't just late. You were 2 minutes late, so that's why I'm right and you're wrong. You didn't almost make it on time. You're late. And that's how you're angry. Because you're not focused on how the person's feeling. You're not caring about their emotions. You care about winning the argument. I'm right because these are the facts. And the last one I want to talk about is familiar to me from home, was we have the screamers. And the screamers are the ones who just let all their emotions out. It's not bad to be a screamer. It's not bad to be any of these. It's just different ways to handle conflict. And some people who are screamers, they're used to being in a family where you sit at the table, and if you have a problem with someone, you yell it out. And you say, hey, this is what I'm feeling. This is all the problems I have. This is because you. And then you feel better afterwards. But the problem is that we all handle conflict differently. So you might be a screamer, but you married a peacemaker. So you're screaming, and you're saying, I can't believe you did this, I can't believe you did that, and the peacekeeper's over here saying, well, dinner was really good, and you're changing the subject, and you're trying to move on. Then you have the sulker over here who's saying, well, I hope everyone's fine, I'm fine. And then you have the litigator saying, oh, well, you're all wrong, because I have the facts right here. And it becomes a complete mess. The truth is, there are many and different ways to handle conflict. But there's a source of the conflict. It doesn't matter really how we handle it. It matters of understanding the source of our conflict. And that will dictate how we handle it. Today we're going to be in the book of James, and it's towards the end of your Bible. We're going to be in James chapter 4. And James starts talking about not how to handle conflict, but why there is conflict. Why there is conflict at home. The book was written by James, who was the half-brother of Jesus. So if anyone knows about family conflict, it would be the half-brother of God. Because I'm not saying their parents picked favorites, but imagine being brothers with someone who never did anything wrong because he was God. It would be rather annoying. So if anyone knows conflict, it's James. So read with me in James chapter 4. What causes fights and quarrels among you? James asks us a pretty simple question. What causes the fighting with you guys? Why are we fighting and why are we arguing? Now, I know wives, you're probably thinking, oh, it's my husband. That's what causes all the fights. And husbands, you're pointing at your wife and saying, no, it's your mother-in-law. And then students, you're kind of pointing at each other going, well, it's my younger brother. If he didn't follow me, if he didn't do everything that I did, life would be a lot simpler. And then we start playing this blame game. Now, it's not me, it's them. And if they did this, it would be better. If they did this, it'd be better. If they were never born, my life would be a lot happier. It becomes childish, it becomes miserable, this blame game. It helps nothing. And it leaves us in a place of being unhappy. We can agree that when we're in conflict, we're miserable. We don't like being in conflict, it makes us unhappy. But let me tell you today, we get to a point when you're in conflict all the time and you don't understand why or where that conflict's coming from, you start to live in conflict. And I know you can probably all think of a person who, when you think of them, yeah, they live in conflict. Every time you talk to them, they're miserable. They always have a new family drama. There's always something new happening, and it's like, oh my gosh, can't your life ever go right? I want to tell you today that some of you are living in conflict. And I can recognize it because I was living in conflict for years and I didn't even realize it. When we play this blame game, we are in a conflict with someone else. And we're blaming them. I want to tell you today that you're giving them control of your happiness. That when you're arguing with someone and you're living in conflict, you're living miserable, you're saying, I'm giving you control of my joy. I'm giving you control of my happiness because you couldn't do what I wanted you to do. Now I'm upset. Now I can't be happy because you didn't do what I asked of you, because you didn't do what was expected of you. Now I can't be happy and now I'm miserable. In what world does it make sense to give someone else control of your happiness? But we do it all the time. We say, because of what you didn't do, now I can't be happy. And you go to work and you go to school and you're just miserable. Why are you miserable? Because so-and-so did this at home. It's okay to get upset. And it's okay to get angry. But your joy and your happiness should never get robbed by an argument or a conflict. I mean that real joy. It shouldn't be taken away so quickly by arguments. James is going to challenge us not to get into this blame game, but to get to the root of the issue. So let's look at that verse again. It says, what causes fights and quarrels among you? What's causing the quoo? Don't they come from the evil desires at war within you? What's causing this fighting and this quarreling within you? It's you. I bet you didn't expect that because we like to say, no, it's them. If they did that, then I wouldn't be so angry. But no, James is saying here, what causes the fights and the quarrels? It's the evil desires at war within you. Stuff that you're dealing with on the inside. The common source to all conflict, the root of your conflict, is going on inside. Y-O-U, it's you. Now, we can play this blame game and go, no, that's not fair. That doesn't make sense, Will. That's not right. How can it be something inside of me? It's something they did. If they didn't do this to me, I would be happy. If they did this when I asked them to, I would be happy. And then we're right back to giving them control of our happiness and our joy. We think this is something that we deserve, But the thing is, every time there's a conflict with you and a family member, it's because there's something you want that you're not getting. That's the real truth. There's something that you want that you're not getting. And I'm not talking about little conflicts like you didn't wash the dishes or you didn't clean your room or you know what, you weren't home when I asked you to. I'm talking about big conflicts that cause all the other little ones. And you know it. There's something that you want, some desire within you, and it's causing you to be so upset that you start bickering all the time over the littlest things, and they become your emotional punching bag. We have to look inside ourselves and go, why is this affecting me so much? Why is this lame argument causing me to be so miserable all the time? Why is it causing me so much grief? There's something going on inside of us that we need to look at and go, okay, that's the real issue. It's not about the dishes. It's about that when I'm home, I don't feel heard. I don't feel listened to. That's a real feeling that you can talk about. There's a root. Because of that desire, if those issues aren't met, it can escalate into conflict. And we see in the next line of what James is about to say, what happens if we let conflict build. He says in James 4, verse 2, you want what you don't have, so you scheme and kill to get it. Now that escalates pretty quickly. I remember reading that going, kill? I don't want to kill anybody. But I don't think he's talking about each other. Although when you're in conflict, you might want to kill each other. That might be a truth. But he's not talking about killing each other. He's talking about killing relationships. You do kill something when you're in conflict. When you don't get what you want, you do kill things. You kill people. You kill the relationships because you're saying, I'm not happy. You killed my happiness, so I'll kill yours. Or you just cut off the relationship altogether and you kill the relationship and you have no talking with them anymore. Some of you have killed so many relationships in your family that when you bump into them at the supermarket, you would rather drop your stuff and run out of the supermarket before talking to them. Or you can pull a Will, because remember, I don't like conflict. I will duck in aisles and kind of crab walk out. And I've done it before. I've seen people walk in. I'm like, oh, it's them. And I would like duck, you know, in the ladies section and be that creeper guy walking. And Pastor Jimmy's going to be talking about that next week when we have that kind of tension with family that we don't even want to see them. You have let conflict and the stuff within kill things around you, kill relationships around you, and it's beginning to destroy you. They wanted you to do something. They wanted you to be something. But you wanted something else. And you wanted to be something else. And it all comes from within, our desires within us. We deserve the things we expect from people, realistic or not. Everything we want drives us so much that we begin to argue, and when we don't get our way, we start to give up our happiness. Honestly, I've had conversations with people close to me who've left home at a very young age. They've killed off relationships with their parents and their brothers and their sisters, ages at 13, 14, 15, 18. I found out this week that it even runs in my family. When there was a big conflict, the tendency in my family is to cut it off and not talk about those family members ever again. Killing off those relationships. And that baggage that you carry because you killed off that relationships affects how you love your families now in your home. I worked in Atlantic City for the past 5 years or so before I moved here and started attending Crossbridge. And it was amazing how many families were broken up because there was a conflict in the home that they never really got to the root issues. And one day dad would just go out for a pack of cigarettes and not come home. Or mom just needed to go for a drive and then we never see mom again. That's when conflict escalates. That's when conflict builds and gets worse. You start killing off important relationships. And that shows us that, it even happens in our home, in our immediate family. Even think about this. Have your parents ever expected something out of you? They wanted you to be something or they had a plan for you and you didn't like that plan. Like they wanted you to work in a certain vocation and you didn't want to do that. A lot of times we kill off that relationship with that parent. And yeah, we still love them, I guess, and we go to see them, but it's awkward when you see your own father and you, instead of talking about what's going on in your life, you just go, well, the weather was nice today. Because you killed off that relationship a long time ago. You emotionally said, you don't like me, I don't like you, let's just cut this off. Sadly, parents, you might be doing this to your kids now. And we cover it by saying we want the best for them. It even happens in relationships between friends or when you're dating. I've experienced this personally. Like I said, I've been dating someone for the past 5 years, and I asked permission to share this with my girlfriend, so we're okay. I won't get in trouble. But 6 months ago, I obviously decided to move here. Now, she lives closer to Atlantic City, and I moved here closer to Philly, and that caused some tension between us. And every visit was getting worse and worse. And I can tell we were in conflict because how our visits would go. First, it would start with, you know, we're kind of excited to see each other, but then there's bickering over the smallest things. Like if we're driving in a car and, you know what, she's the navigator with the GPS and we miss an exit, I would just get so upset. It would take me 2 minutes out of my way. We started bickering, we started arguing, and then even sitting on the same couch watching the same movie, we'd start to feel distant. Like we were in the room together, but really mentally we were somewhere else. That was conflict, and that was us living in conflict. But then a turning point happened. A turning point where we stopped and we started trying to focus on each other and started focusing on ourselves. We started to look at ourselves and go, okay, how am I adding to the problem? I get upset every time she comes. I want to see her, but I find myself getting upset every time she's here, and when she leaves, I'm left angry and bitter because of some fight we had. So I started to think, okay, it's not what she's doing. What am I doing? Let's look at me for a second. And when I understood that, there was something much deeper going on in me. That it wasn't, you know, because you passed an exit. There was a deeper issue. And I started to understand my feelings. I was able to go to her and talk to her about what I was really feeling. This is what I'm really dealing with. And when she saw that, she started to turn and look at herself and go, okay, well then what am I dealing with? This is how I truly feel. And then there was this great word that was missing from our relationship, this word called honesty. And our conflict, it eradicated that. When we start to look at ourselves, we get this word honesty and we start coming, hey, this is what I'm really feeling. It's not about missing the exit. It's about this. And that helped us to approach conflict a lot more healthy and a lot different. Because of that, finally in our relationships, we feel heard. So why do we have so much conflict with people closest to us? It's simply because they are close to us and we want something from them. So whether we deserve it or not is not the first issue we need to deal with when it comes to conflict. When we put our desires and pressures on others, even those closest to us, we have the power to destroy them. We destroy them with fighting and bickering and belittling and the whole time fighting in the kitchen or going into your kids' rooms and cleaning things and arguing on how their rooms look. The whole time you're saying, it's them, it's them, it's them. If they just listen, no, James is saying, it's you. You want something and you're not getting it. It's not wrong to want things. But you want something and you're using your words and your actions poorly to get what you want. One way or another. That's conflict. So think for a minute, what would our families look like at home if we understood this? That maybe the fighting with them isn't about them, but it might be about you. James continues on and saying in verse 2, you are jealous of what others have, but you can't get it. So you fight and wage war to take it from them. James brings us right back to it. Why don't we get along at home? Because you don't get what you want, so you fight. You wage war against them. But what would it look like if we paused and asked ourselves the question, what is it that I want that I'm not getting? The real question, not I want the dishes done. No, no, no. What is it that you want that you're not getting? Why am I upset? Why am I so angry? It's because I'm just not getting what I want. Last week, we wanted to start the habit of asking the question, what can I do to help? Now I want to start a new habit today. I want you to ask yourselves, what is it that I want that I'm not getting? Now I get this might be confusing. Does that mean I should never get mad? No, you can still get mad. Does it mean that they're not doing something wrong? No, they're probably doing something wrong. But it's saying, I know something deeper is going on. Do you ever find yourselves in a state when your family is bickering over everything? A season in your marriage or in your family at home where you're just fighting over all of the little stuff that don't even matter? Look inside yourself and ask, what do I want that I'm not getting? Why am I getting so mad? And what is the real issues? Taking that minute to pause in a conflict to think about that when you're in the heat of the argument saying, what am I not getting? What's the real issue? Can change the approach to the conflict. So what do we do about this? I'm sure we don't want to fight, and I'm sure we don't want to get in conflict with our families, but it happens. So what can we do to lessen this? What can we do to lessen the amount of conflict? There's actually a few things that the Bible talks about. We all experience tension at home. We all experience conflict at home, whether you're a follower of Jesus or you're not. But I want to give you a few things today to help us handle conflict and approach it a lot better. So I want to stick in James. In the rest of James chapter 4, verse 2, he says, "Yet you don't have what you want because you don't ask God for it." You don't have what you want because you're not asking God. Yet again, a simple thing, but so hard to put into practice. James is challenging us not to just stop in the middle of the argument and ask ourselves, what am I not getting? But he's telling us, before you even go into the conflict, before you approach the conversation, before you storm into the room, and before you write that note and stick it on the fridge with a snippy comment, before you blow up, go and stop and talk to God. Before you do anything, before you open your mouth to that person, get on your hands and knees and say, God, I'm about to go talk to them for the 80th time about the same exact topic. What's really going on here? What is it that I want that I'm not getting? To say to God, I don't need you to change them. I'm not asking you for you to change them. But God, I'm asking you to help me understand me. Help me understand why am I feeling so strongly about this issue. And it's powerful because the focus is taken off of them for 1 second. Because the whole time when we're in conflict, we're all about them. We're all about what they're doing. But for a second, if you stop it and you ask God, okay, what about me? What am I doing? What am I feeling? That focus is taken off of you. And you start to figure out the root issue of what's going on. And we start to see that part of the problem before we even had the fight in the long run was something that I wanted. We don't get our way, so we are quick to get angry and start arguing. But when we take time to see how we fit in the problem, there's more understanding. And when you approach that person, I can almost guarantee that would be a lot better. If you understand your feelings, you understand, okay, this is why I did this. Now I can articulate and I can explain, this is what I'm feeling. Instead of just going to them saying, you didn't do the dishes. No, you know what? When you don't do the dishes, it makes me feel this way. It helps our situation so much in the long run. And then James completes this statement with a warning in verse 3. He says, and even when you ask, you don't get because your motives are all wrong. You want only what will give you pleasure. James is saying, when you ask God, you have to ask with the right motives. You can't go and say, okay, I'm mad at them, so I'm going to go pray about it. And now, God, help me win this argument because they're wrong, I'm right. And you walk in the conversation, well, I'm prayed up. I know that I'm the winner. And I've known people like this. They come up to me and say, well, Will, I've prayed about it and you're wrong. Well, that's not an argument. I can't go against that. I can't defend that. But that's what's happening here. He's saying, no. Don't say, okay, help me have all the right things to say to make sure they know they lost this argument. No, God's saying, or James is saying, when you ask God, ask with the right motives. That you want to go into that conversation, not to crush them, but to love them and say, okay, this is my issue with you, and I want to deal with it, so when we come out of this conflict, we feel better than when I first approached you when I was angry at you. When I come into the conversation, I'm angry, and I'm upset. When I leave, I want us to leave on better terms. I want us to leave. You know what? That conflict's done with. We're forgiven. That's what he's saying. That's the right motives, not to say, well, so I can own them later. If you're here today and you know what, you're not ready to pray to God, or it doesn't make sense yet, because I look at that and think, like, sometimes, well, God, what are you going to do about it? He can do a lot, and he will do a lot when you start talking to him. But if you're not there yet, Jesus in Matthew 18 gives us a very practical way to handle conflict. He's still talking to the believers, but I think this can be addressed and used in all conflict. He says this in Matthew 18, verse 15. If another believer sins against you, go privately and point out the offense. If the other person listens and confesses it, you have won that person back. But if you are unsuccessful, take one or two others with you and go back again so that everything you say may be confirmed by two or three witnesses. If the person still refuses to listen, take your case to the church. Now Jesus is saying, when you're in conflict with someone, Our tendencies is to go and talk to everybody else about the conflict first. We don't go to the person and say, you know what, this is what I'm feeling, this is the issues I have. No, first thing we do is we call up mom or dad, or we call up our brother and sister, or we call up friends, or we get advice from church, or we get advice from all these other people who have nothing to do with the conflict, nothing to do with the conversation, and we get all of their advice, and then we go back. And we make that person that we're talking about look bad. That's not the point. You don't want your husband or your wife or your children to look bad to you. But we do that when we call everybody else. There's times when, you know, you want to vent and you're like, well, I'm going to call my mom up and tell them what they've been doing. No, Jesus is saying, before you start talking to everybody else and getting all this advice and all these other things, first, go to them one-on-one. Let me tell you today that when you do that, I bet you most of your conflict, most of your arguments will be handled right then and there. Because who wants to hear, wait, we're arguing and you've been talking to all those other people about it? No one wants to hear that. You feel like someone's talking behind your back. When you go to that person one-on-one and say, hey, this is what I'm feeling. Even in the home, how many times I've seen a mom or dad complain to their child about their spouse? No, don't do that. Don't badmouth each other to your child. Go to each other first and say, hey, look, we got to deal with this. There's something going on. Most of your conflict will be handled a lot easier if you did it one-on-one. So before we close, I just want to sum up what we've been talking about. We all deal with conflict. We all have issues with family and there's tension. It would be unrealistic to say we don't. But when you enter conflict, to stop and pray, God, okay, reveal this to me. What's the deeper issue here? Then to go back and really ask yourself the question, what do I want that I'm not getting? When you figure that out, go to the person and tell them, hey, this is what I'm feeling. This is what's going on. What about you? What are you not getting? Conflict will look a lot different. It's not saying conflict won't happen, but when it does, we can look at it a little better. And when you go one-on-one, before you go to anybody else, go to them and tell them how you feel. And I know the reality of it all is, when you're in the middle of conflict, you're not going to think, okay, let me stop and pray. No, that's not how we think. I know it, because when I get heated, the first thing on my mind isn't to go, hey, God, what do I really feel? No, it's, why did you do this? But the more you do it, the more you practice it, the better you're going to get with it. And it's okay to say, you know what, I'm really upset right now. Let me walk away for a second and come back a few hours later or maybe a day later and go, hey, this is what I'm really feeling. And I prayed about it. I didn't pray about God to change you. I prayed, God, to help me understand, what if I'm the wrong one in the situation? And then have a healthy approach to the conflict and have a healthy discussion. So as the worship team comes back up, I'm going to pray. Let's just pray together. God, thank you for what you teach us. You've given us practical applications that we can do in Scripture to handle something as simple as conflict, something as annoying as arguments. You've helped us to learn how to deal with it better and how to have healthy conflict. You don't ignore it and say, oh, because you're a believer now, everything's going to be spotless and clean. No, you're saying, I understand there's conflict on earth. I understand there's conflict in family. And you help us deal with that. And God, now as we prepare to give back to God, as we prepare to give back to you, help us to remember that this is our true act of worship, that we're trusting you with our finances. And I know, God, I just feel like I need to say this. I know that at home, even this act of giving to you can be a tension in the conflict in the home. I pray that you give people confidence to go to their spouse or whoever they live with and say, you know what, this is why I want to give back to God. We love you. We thank you. We pray in Jesus' name. Amen.